Hello, Sugars. Boy, what a week it has been, Sugars. I just got back from Podcast Movement, which if you've been listening to the show, you know I went there last year in Chicago. So I went again this year. I just had the best freaking time. If you're a podcaster and you're listening to this, or you're a podcast fan, or you're thinking about starting a podcast, I can't recommend that conference enough, because it's just really, really great, awesome people that are just love podcasting. It was great. So I'm feeling refreshed. I'm feeling re-inspired. I'm always excited, but I'm even more excited to continue on with the Dear Maddie Show and with TVT Time, which that's going to be exciting. But for today, what is going on is Griff Pippett. You know, if you're a ginger and you're a stand-up comedian and you're from Oklahoma, well, sugar, I'm going to have you on my fucking show, because we just need to talk. And that is exactly what I got with Griff Pippin. This is one of those things, what I love about doing this show. This is going to sound creepy, I think, but I was going to say it allows strangers to come into my home and then I feel like they're friends. That makes me sound like I'm just like a prostitute or something, just sitting in a sling, just waiting for you know what? Maybe she just listened to the show. Tell me what you think. But yes, Griff Pippin feels like a friend. But we didn't have sex because he's not gay. I mean, but still, yeah. You know what? Just enjoy this show. All right, everybody. Yeah, here we go. What? It's a podcast. Here we are. Woo! Woo! Dear Maddie Show, everybody. Hey, I'm Matt Marr. This is a gingerific episode, I will say, Griff Pippin.
So gingerific.
Today on the show is my friend, fellow Oklahoman.
Yeah.
Fellow ginger, Griff Pippin.
Yeah. Woo! Great to be
here. Who I'm just now meeting in person. I think we met, I think you might have commented on like a fellow comedians and I saw you, and I think I just friended you and emailed you and said, you're a redhead, you're a comic, and you're from Oklahoma, we should be friends.
Was it Brady Matt? I gave you a right and left or something.
No, was it Brady Matthews? Is that how we know each other? Do you know Brady?
Yeah, I know Brady.
He has a painting. He just did an art show, so that's why I have a blank space on my wall, because he took my painting for his art show. But because he did it, because he's awesome. Maybe you commented on Brady. I don't know. We probably know. Do you know Brian Monarch too?
Yeah.
Maybe one of those guys.
Done a bunch of his
Brandon Marcus. Brian Monarch is like, I can't say his name, but he's like fucking killing it.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
And like when I saw him, like honestly, like, it was like I did one of his shows like way like in the valley. There wasn't even a stage. It was like at a chicken like place or whatever.
Chicken place.
And honestly, I saw him. I was like, he's a nice guy, but I don't know if he's that funny. And then I saw him like a year later. I was like, this guy's fucking worked on his craft and he's hilarious.
He really has. And his Adele joke is great, man. If anyone listening, man, he's a funny guy.
Brian Monarch, yeah, he's a great guy.
Look up Brian Monarch because he's always on super dope shows like Tonight at the Improv.
Or he was at midnight or something like that.
He's doing very well.
He's very well. So this is getting to know you section, because so where are you from in Oklahoma?
Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay.
Right there.
Like Edmond or?
Yeah, I lived half of my childhood in Oklahoma City and the other half in Edmond.
Okay, because my mom used to live, she's retired now, lives in Dallas, but because I'm from Ardmore.
Good old Ardmore. There's a frog. What is it? What's that restaurant?
Yeah, Two Frogs.
Two Frogs.
It's really good.
Two Frogs.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I know Aubrey, the owner of that, very well. But I started my master's at Oklahoma City University for like a hot week. So I lived in like, was it like on 23rd exit of Oklahoma City?
Yeah, right by Chinatown. The Vietnamese area.
Yeah, or the Paseo or whatever. And then my mom lived right on Memorial, kind of over by Quail Springs Mall.
Yeah.
I used to work at that makeup counter, actually, when I was in, because I stopped college and I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? So I lived in Oklahoma for like a year and worked at that makeup counter. But anyway, that was mine. Did you go to high school like in Edmond or?
Yeah, Deer Creek.
Oh, yeah.
Out there in the sticks.
So what did you do after you moved from? You don't have the accent still either. I still sound like I got a. Are you going to have it?
I have a bit about it on stage.
Oh, you do?
I have several bits about it.
Oh, you do? Did you purposely lose it? Or, like, are you going to have it more by the end of this show?
See,
am I going
to
bring
you,
it out?
I don't have an accent, but to people out here, like, I hear it. Right?
Oh, really?
Which is crazy. But, No, I just I think when you have a strong accent, you get not that I cared that people are like, you sound like redneck. Like, I'm all about Matthew McConaughey being like, fuck you, Hollywood. I'm sticking with this. And he turned, you know. So, you know, maybe if I go drinking a little bit, it comes out. But I think I probably worked on it over the years because I don't want people to hear my accent and just kind of pigeonhole you as a certain person. Yeah. Kind of like if someone, it's like a lot of foreigners come here and they take accent reduction classes because they don't want to be like, you know, if an Australian comes over here and says, hi, how you guys going? And they're like, oh, you're from Australia. Tell me about kangaroo. And he got he gets tired of hearing that shit. So he takes accent reduction classes so he blends in and can just have a normal life, you know? But then there's some people that kind of like that attention and like that. Maybe if I'm out and I'm at a bar or something, I might thicken it up a little bit because people like that.
Does it help with girls?
Yes, it does. And on stage, a little bit, I might thicken
it didn't
it
help
up.
Me with guys. Guys don't really care, but girls like it.
Girls might, yeah. And also, people find you more honest. Psychology studies show this. People
really?
Find you more trustworthy. I mean, look at our presidents. Bush, Clinton. Who do you have? Well, Jimmy Carter before that. A lot of these Southern guys, people trust them.
Oh, really?
People listen to a Southern accent and they trust it. So yeah, I can use it whenever I need to use it. But people like it. When I get on stage, they're thicken it up because so many times everybody sounds the same. Like if you're a straight white male, you better do something to fucking stand out.
And not just talk about your dick.
There's nothing special about you if you're a straight white male. Boy, you better have something up your sleeve because we've heard your story a few million times. Go fuck off and come back with a good story. So I was like, I got to stand out a little bit. And that's the thing. Like, you know, Theo Vaughn, you know, he gets up there, thick accent, and stays in the pocket, Mr. Southern Pan. You know, he has that joke where he's like, I don't think slavery happened. I mean, listen, hear me out. I mean, we never found the boats, you know, like,
wow.
You know what I mean? Like, how many gay people are there out there? Seriously. Like, how many people did that monkey bite?
Wow.
You know, he stays Southern.
That's hilarious to me because I know people that say that and mean it.
Yeah. And so, you know, that guy, and he's just that guy on stage.
Yeah.
That's who he is. So, yeah, I think people, when I got on stage and I thicken it up a little bit, I don't have a thick accent. I have a joke where I'm like, people are like, why don't you have like a strong accent? And I'm like, because I don't want people to think I'm a fucking idiot when I talk to them. I don't want people to hear my voice and think, oh, he hates black people. And that's tough for me because I'm a racist. That's a joke I have. And then I'm like, you know, because I knew, like, people don't take you seriously if you have a strong accent. Like, because I knew this guy. He graduated from Yale.
Mm-hmm.
And had a really, like, a prestigious job. But mm-hmm. no one would take him seriously because of his accent. Mm-hmm. His name was President Bush. That's a joke. That's a joke I do. And those are some of the jokes I do on stage.
That's so true. Now, do you feel like... So I have to admit, I'm actually not like my grandmother is, and my beard is really red right here, but I'm actually not, I color my hair. I'm not a redhead.
That looks natural.
I mean, it was reddish when I was a kid, and then it's just gotten older. I've got gray, but I just got bored one day and I colored my hair, and then I started booking work like crazy. And I'm surprised I've never seen you at the same commercial audition.
I go on a lot of auditions because of the red hair and the beard.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, but I got so much more dick whenever I started coloring my hair red. It's so like, do women throw themselves at gingers? Like,
here's
the
thing about
that.
I talked to my friends about this.
I'm also into dating like Latin and black guys. So like, they're like, oh, ginger. You know?
Okay. So, yes and no. Girls, it's black and white. Girls either, nope, I don't like redheads, or they're like, ooh, I like it. It's exotic. It's exciting. So, yeah, some girls are really into it, and with the beard and everything, and then some girls are just like, that's not my type. Now, I do well.
And you, like, got the cool freckles and all that. I got none of that.
I do very well with black and Latin and non-white women. because I am the most exotic to
okay,
them.
Okay, see, I do too.
I'm not just white. I'm super white. I'm the most exotic version to a black person.
Yes. Is somebody knocking on my door?
Fuck off.
Hello?
No, okay. I'm going to keep going.
I'm telling them fuck off. No, so basically, yeah, and it's kind of like some days I'm like, I want some chocolate ice cream today. And then sometimes the chocolate ice cream's like, you know, I want a little bit of strawberry today.
Yeah.
So and I'm like, you know what? I'm somebody's fetish, and I'm fine with that. I can live with that.
I'm fine with that too.
I'm a fetish to some people, and I'm fine with that. Everybody's like, good. That's on everybody's bucket list. And for me personally,
again, because most white men are not a fetish.
No.
So like again, you're like differentiating yourself.
Yeah. It's a buddy of mine, black comic, Chase Durasso, as a joke. He goes, redheads are the N-words of the white people. And I'm like, that's a good joke.
That is a good joke.
And I personally, I like redhead women. That's like a thing for me. I've dated three and I like them. I think they're sexy and very well could marry one and keep the population alive too.
Keep it going.
I mean, that's the thing, you know, And one thing I can tell you attract more than anything is gay men. I don't know what it is. God, I go to any, like, I've had four gay roommates and a lot of gay friends. Probably some of my closest top circle of friends are, most of them are actually gay. And we go out to the Abbey or we go out to the bars and it's every fucking black guy. Every single black guy and day. And I'm like, hey.
I'm telling you, it's like a magnet.
Yeah, just having and the thing is, and a lot of my friends are like, why are you going to these gay bars and everything? And like, why are you hanging out at gay bars? That's weird. I'm like, I'll tell you why. Because I like being told that I'm pretty, and I like getting free drinks, and I like being objectified. And they're like, you work out 24-hour fitness over there. That's like the gayest gym over there on Santa Monica. I'm like, yeah, I shower. And I turn around to towel off, and some dude's just staring at my dick. And they're like, yeah, why, dude? That's fucking gay. What are you doing? I'm like, you know what? It's nice to have someone stare at you and admire your, you know, what you're working with. It's nice to have someone stare at me and be like, I like what you have there.
A compliment is a compliment.
Nothing's going to happen, but it's nice to have someone look and shake their head. I'm like, you know what? It feels good inside. I like being objectified. I like getting free drinks. I like have someone squeezing my ass, turning around and being like, nope, sorry, you can't have that. But it feels good. I leave gay bars feeling good about myself.
Good
I don't leave that way with a normal bar getting shot down by girls. But yeah, no. I mean,
like cues on Bundy.
Yeah, no. If I go to a black bar, I stand out. Yeah. I stand out, and the girls just, I don't know. Oh, what's you doing in here, baby? Oh, I like your red hair. What's your name?
Yeah,
you know,
I get
and that
all
comes
the time.
Out. Yeah, and so yeah, and I think we attract black people because we're the most exotic thing to them.
Yeah,
because a lot of people like black. A lot of dudes like to date black chicks because it's exotic and it's exciting and it's different and. A lot of
which they won't. A lot of people won't even admit that they're like, "Oh, I'm just attracted," and that's great. But I just, the reason why I ask you that is because I know it's not just a me thing in that in coloring my hair, and I see the stark difference of like the little bit of dick I would get compared to how it completely like 180 turned around.
I don't care if it's entertainment, if it's car dealership in this town, you got to do something to stand out.
You do
whether it's getting dick or not, and. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't know. Is your boyfriend black?
Oh yeah, he is.
Yeah, see,
yeah,
that's
him in
that's
all
the
pictures.
There's something about me to black women, and I think it's probably to black men as well. There's just something that's just sexier and more sexual. To black
I am
people.
More attracted to black men. But it's not like a.
They're more sexual.
I don't fetish.
No,
but I mean, for me, it's just been like, it's just.
You like them more.
That's who I'm attracted to. And it's also too, for me, it's more of like a. For me, in my experience, it's been just like the guys that I've dated that were. I've never like dated a white comedian or something, but also, I just feel like I could be sillier more. And I don't know why.
Black people are more open minded.
I just think it's
white
like,
people have a stick up their ass.
I think it's just I don't know. It just kind of always has happened that way. I think it's something I can't describe. And
you know what it is, and my friend, and you feel I am more sexually attracted towards black women. There's just something that's just sexier to them, and. what it is, and I have a friend who her friend only dates black guys, right? She's white, but she only mm-hmm. dates black, and we're like, why? And she took her years to come up with the answer, and the answer mm-hmm. was black men, and you could probably relate to this, black men know how to make you feel better and compliment better, and they make you feel sexy, whereas white men don't know to do that, and they're just... Like this one girl, a friend of mine, is a female comic.
They have been more complimentary.
Yeah, they're just better at making you feel good about yourself.
Like that's so funny because the first ever guy to ever look at me and say, like, wow, you're beautiful, was an African-American man. And I remember it shocked me when he said it because no man had ever said that to me before. And, like, we would go out and he would say things like, you know, oh, you look really nice. And, like, and I never dated a guy before that had done that.
And that's something that a black man has over a white man. They just, they're good at making you feel good.
Yeah, maybe.
They're good at making you feel. And that's what this girl said. She said, I date them because they know that they make me feel good inside. And I'm like, well, at the end of the day, that's who you should be dating, who makes you feel good.
Who makes you feel good.
Not what color they are, whoever makes you feel good.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I'm also... We won't get into that, but I'm also a little bit of, you know, a size queen, and let's be honest.
Yeah.
Guys aren't doing well with that. Now, so you've lived in California for how long?
6 years.
So what, do you miss Oklahoma? Do you miss that? Or you feel like...
I left there like, fuck that place, you know? Mm-hmm. I dropped a match on a tank of gas, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, And as I got older, I was able to appreciate the things about mm-hmm. it. You know,
did you leave after high school or did you go to college somewhere?
I just graduated college at OU, left.
Oh, okay.
6 months in, my advisor calls me. I screwed up. You still have classes left to take. I'm like, dude, I live in LA now. Are you serious? Well, we'll try to figure it out. We can get something online. And the only course that met my requirements upper level was Jewish comedy. I'm like, oh, fuck's sake. But I'm like, only class in college I ever liked. I hated every class. Jewish comedy is my favorite.
Wait, that was a real class?
It's a real class.
And you did an online class of it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I, you know, being in Oklahoma, I was like, we didn't know what Jews were. Just like when
I didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't know Jews. There were no Jews in Oklahoma. I come out here, and like almost all my friends now are gay and Jewish. And
yeah,
that's not a thing that's really Oklahoma. I move out here, all my friends are gay and Jewish. But this class got me obsessed with Jewish culture, and I just love Jewish culture, and I think because I could relate to the Jewish mm-hmm. mother, that is the quintessential centerpiece of the Jewish family.
It's very similar to a Southern guilt mother, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is, and I was like, I think I could relate to my Jewish friends, and their personalities are largely derived from the Jewish mother, and I think a Southern person mm-hmm. is largely derived from the Southern mother.
Agreed.
And so... And this class was great about what is Jewish comedy, where does Jewish humor come from, and it was a blast. I really liked it. And then moving out here, I actually got to experience, is because there's a large Jewish community out here, and just my Jewish friends and so many comedians, and that's why I love living out here. There's different cultures of food, and there's different, especially as a gay guy, you don't want to be in Oklahoma. There's nothing for you there.
My family's cool. I'm close with my family. They're great. They're supportive of me. They love my boyfriend. Like, I'm very lucky in that regards, but it's just still, it's like, I mean, a perfect example, I got my undergrad at North Texas, and it was a music degree, and it's a really good music school, so there were people all over the world. So one of my friends in college, she was studying music to be a Jewish cantor, like at a temple, but I didn't realize until I went back to Oklahoma, like, I'd been in college for a couple of years, and I went back, and I was talking with my buddy, who still is, you know, a really good friend, and he said, he was talking about a car, and he was like, oh, yeah, he's like, yeah, we got a good deal on a car. He's like, and he said the term. He said, yeah, we Jewed them down. And I went, and it hit me what I'd heard that all growing up, and I never knew what it was talking about. And then I just got it that, oh, it was literally talking about Jewish people saying Jew them down. And I told my friend that. I was like, do you know what that means? He's like, what do you mean? And I explained it to him, and he was like, that's fucked up, because we just don't know that's Oklahoma unless all you know is pretty much white. I even grew up Catholic and people make fun of me. I'm not Catholic anymore. But unless you're white and not even Protestant, because not even like Methodist, unless you're like white Baptist or white Church of Christ.
Well, Baptist is Protestant.
Like, well, I know you're Protestant, but I mean like Methodist, even they would be like Episcopalian. What is that? Methodist, Unitarian, you know what I mean? So it's like, unless you're that little subset, little strip of people, you're on the outside.
It's ridiculous. Well, it's, you know, just, and that's like for anyone listening, for Matt, you know, being gay in Oklahoma, it would be like being a vegan in a barbecue restaurant.
It's, you're, I'm just gonna,
like,
use that joke.
Yeah, you can't. You're like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I got out and in college, I had a blast because I hung out with all these international students.
Because OU's a huge school.
Yeah, and I partied with these Bolivians and these parties, farm parties till 8 in the morning. And then I dated a girl from all over the world, and I hung out with a good friend of mine from Germany who I keep in touch with. And I go to Europe and I visit these friends. But you move out here, and it's got its plenty of problems out here. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But I go back, and I can appreciate the slow pace of life. It's relaxing, yeah, versus the madness. I'm so hardwired now that go, go, go. I drink my coffee. I'm psychotic. I'm that guy who's like just loves to work, and mm-hmm, it's nonstop 80 hours a week. That's who I am now. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's hard for me to go back to Oklahoma and adapt to just kind of
I get bored quickly now.
I can't. For a while there, I could do it, but I'm like, even when I get home, there's nothing to do. I have to my brain, this is a terrible analogy, but it's the only one I have. It's like the beaver. If the beaver doesn't chew wood every day, you know its teeth will go through its brain, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the beaver has to chew all the time, or else its teeth will shoot up through its brain.
And kill it. Oh, wow.
Now, so I've been told. Now, my brain is the same way, and this is how a lot of entertainers are. They're addicts, right? Almost every entertainer is an addict on some level.
Oh, I agree with that.
Now, our brain has to be stimulated, because naturally we have a chemical imbalance, because we have a low natural production of serotonin. Right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be doing something to stimulate your brain. Mm-hmm. Alcohol, drugs, coffee.
Whatever.
And here's what I have a brain of an addict, but I don't have an addiction problem, because I am always stimulating my brain with something, but I don't let it go overboard. I'm always, you know, a couple nights a week, I'll have a couple beers, but I don't try not to get overboard. Mm-hmm. I'm always got a coffee in me, or I'm reading, or I'm writing jokes, but I've always got to be stimulating my brain. Mm-hmm. And when I go back to Oklahoma, it's kind of like scary. Like, oh, God. Oh, Jesus. So I send...
Well, reason people do drugs, number one reason.
Boredom.
It's boredom.
Yeah.
I learned that when I did my master's. I ran a crystal meth recovery group, and I'd never done meth. If I would, I'd be a lot skittier.
Crystal meth recovery group. You said on... what's your memoir?
yeah, that's right. But and now, like when I go back to Oklahoma, this was not... Because I've been out here for 13 years. But now, in the last like 5 years, meth is fucking everywhere in Oklahoma now. It's crazy.
Not just Oklahoma.
But I mean,
you go to Bakersfield, that's ground zero.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, exactly. But yeah, it's like, but 10 years ago, I wasn't seeing billboard posters in Oklahoma, like in Ardmore, driving down like Highway 70, talking about meth addiction and stuff. And now it's like,
wow, it's
so
rampant.
Many people. It's rampant. And it's just, they're all fucking bored.
And it's funny because I'm fascinated with drugs, uh-huh, just different, like, this
do
category, this category I would like to call Schedule 1 Plus drugs. these are just, like, just fucked up drugs, right? And this includes meth. And then I went down this rabbit hole, and I'm like, Russia does something way worse than meth. And I'm like, meth's pretty bad, dude. It's pretty messed up.
Yeah.
Called Crocodile. You can Google it. I would like to Google it right now, because we're on the topic of meth, just
yeah,
for our listeners.
Do you do these different drugs to try it, or you no judgment, I don't care, or do you just like to learn about them? Like, do you bath salts? Do you do mushrooms?
Well, crocodile drug. We will get to bath salts in a second. I'm excited about. Okay. Woo! This is in, okay.
Pippin has a plan, y'all.
Now, oh, Narcanon. Now, desomorphine. Crocodile. Tell me about crocodile ingredients. Now, this is in Russia, okay? Where it, crocodile drug ingredients. Recipe. Okay, there we go. This stuff, let me give you a little precursor. This stuff makes meth look like an over-the-counter drug.
Oh, wow.
A cookout. Information. Okay. The moonshine drug. Russia's moonshine drug.
Russian moonshine.
And this is taking these rundown, poor Russian, like, factory towns. If you can imagine how rough that would be in your head. Let me give you some ingredients that's in this. Migration from heroin. Okay. What is... And the reason... It's called crocodiles because your skin starts to like basically turn like a crocodile and scaly.
Oh my God.
Okay, come on. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm imagining because I just finished The Americans last night. So I'm imagining, like, which is a great show. If nobody's watching The Americans, there's a plug for that. I don't know why. They're not paying us, but just watch it.
Totally watch it. How it's made. Okay.
It's all right. I don't mind the dead air. It's a podcast, everybody. You know.
That's what editing's for, right?
Yeah. That's what editing. I don't edit that much. Okay. I don't like to.
Anyway.
Maybe I will.
Maybe sorry, I'm used to. Oh fuck it! It's got like drain cleaner, paint thinner. It's got nail polish remover.
Damn.
It's got antifreeze. Imagine anything that should never be consumed by a person, and that's all in there, and they're smoking that. And I think HIV rates are like 40% among users because they use their needle.
Yeah,
40% of these people are getting it. And they're dying and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, the reason I bring it up is because it's like, yeah, meth's a problem, but it's like, there's way worse than meth.
There's way worse.
Now, in L.A., we have this epidemic of homelessness, and you'll see this. You see these,
which is the worst it's ever been.
Yeah, it's here. Crazy people running around the street like, hey, what? Wait, the government did it. And they run
That's
around.
A pretty good homeless impression.
Yeah, and they're crazy. You ever
I wish I could get the visual. He's even got, like, you've got the body movement. You've really studied this.
Yeah. That's about it. You ever see them? Like, oh, yeah. They just walk around the street, like, dancing. Like, whoa, what the fuck? I had to do some research, some market research. And I'm like, what is this drug they're on? I'm like, that's not crack. I thought it was crack cocaine. It's not. It's called Flocka. And Flocka is second-generation bath salts.
Oh.
And a lot of times, people just go nuts. People murder people. People do crap. Now, meth is a big problem in Canada. And meth, a lot. I've heard stories, so many stories of people killing people on meth because they just go crazy.
Yeah, it's
serial killers aren't super uncommon under meth.
No, yeah, it literally makes you psychotic.
Psychotic to where people like good
people.
You
hear their voices.
Good people end up killing people.
I once had, and I'm not supposed to say this, but whatever. Like two people are listening. I had a client who missed a session in the next week. He missed a session because he had relapsed and done meth, and he felt so much guilt about it. The voices told him to stab himself in the chest and scar himself so that way he'll remember and not ever do meth again. And he almost stabbed himself. He like stabbed himself like just above his heart, but it was like a 3-inch wound. So I was like, okay. Like, I can't bite my nails. I thought that was a problem. Anyway, we should probably get to some questions. Griff Pippin, I love having you on. We just can talk and talk.
Oh,
I wish it wasn't before noon. I crack open a beer and we do some second generation Flocka.
I think I did podcast 4 hours one time.
Oh, we're not going to do that. I can't even masturbate for that long. Like, I enjoy that. So, all right. So we've got two questions this week. One is from a listener who submitted before. Her name is Jackie, and Jackie says, Dear Maddie, as you know, I am a working mom and the struggle is real, all caps. I was reading a book about juggling all the duties, and there is a chapter on how women apologize too often and at the wrong times. I found that really interesting because I know I apologize way too much when I am not sorry, like when I don't have chocolate milk for my 4-year-old. In a strange twist, my boss used me as an example of someone who apologizes too much, not in a mean way, just more constructive. Apologizing in the workplace, especially in a contract situation for stupid shit like late emails, puts us in a place of blame for things that aren't our fault at all. All that said, how can I stop apologizing? It seems to be my natural response out of empathy, not accepting blame. I'm not sorry I don't have Mike's beloved chocolate milk. I am sorry he's disappointed. Sorry, I'm not sorry, Jackie, 24.
First question, are you Canadian?
She's not.
Okay.
She's not. I know Jackie lives in, because we become friends now. She was on the show. She lives, I believe, in Maryland. Yes, she lives in Maryland. So, yeah. So, I have this question because I thought maybe I should save this question for like a mom, but I feel like when you're from the South, you get people apologizing all the time for stuff that's not beyond their control because that is ingrained in our culture. So, like,
being polite.
Do you over apologize?
I'll tell you what, being from Oklahoma, I used to be that guy. And being from Oklahoma, you're a certain person. And then I moved out here, and I got, for lack of a better term, hardened, a lot tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't put up with bullshit, and I'm just rational about how I interact with people. If I need to apologize, it's because I screwed up.
Mm.
If I didn't screw up, mm-hmm. and I don't feel the need to apologize when you've made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Saying sorry, but no, if I apologize, it's because I've done something wrong or I've done you wrong. So, no, I don't apologize that often because I'm not screwing up. Now, people, here's the thing. If you apologize too much, that's a character flaw. Let's just be straight up. And that being said, it's because you're scared. Someone who apologizes too much, mm-hmm. we all know that person. And that says a lot about someone. They apologize. Mm-hmm. They're so scared of offending people or hurting people, and they're walking on eggshells.
I used to be that.
You live chronically in fear.
I have to work on not being that person.
What it says, it's not about apologizing. It's dig deeper. It's about living. You're chronically living in fear of offending people and wanting people's validation. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. Okay, people are going to be people. Do you just if you're a good person and you live with integrity? You won't do things to offend people all the time, and you want to apologize.
Knowing Jackie, she's like one of the coolest, best people in the world. Like, she's very kind and very awesome. She's starting a nonprofit.
But to the point where, like, though, it being too kind and too apologetic,
but I mean,
is just as toxic as being too much of an asshole. On the other end of the spectrum.
True, yeah.
Because if you're too nice, people will walk all over you.
All over you.
All over you. That's how, especially in this town, man.
Yeah.
You got to be tough. People will fuck you right in the ass. People will bend you over. They
and
won't
not
use
good
lube.
Way. Not
they
in a good
will
way.
Not use lube. They will raw dog you, and they'll come back in the morning, and they'll raw dog you again, and you're going to say, this hurts, and they're like, we're going to raw dog you again. And if you're not careful, every time you apologize, they're going to raw dog the shit out of you right there on a park bench. So
I'm turned on now. So no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, and so
you said you used to do that. Was there a moment where you kind of just switched, or did something specifically happen? You're like, wow, I'm getting fucked over. I'm not going to be this person anymore.
I dug deeper and said, you know, this whole apologizing thing, and so many people are, dude, stop apologizing. What they're really saying is, dude, stop being a fucking pushover. That's what that said. Mm. I dug deeper and said, what is this apologizing for? It's a character flaw of me being scared of people and scared of offending people and scared. I went so far, like, I go out of my way to say whatever I want on stage because I'm not scared. People really love when I go out there and be bold. I say racist shit on stage. I offend people. I ruffle feathers. Mm-hmm. I'm the opposite of this sorry guy that I used to be. Mm-hmm. And I live in freedom, and it's so fun. So, listen, it sounds like that Jackie's a great girl and she's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
You're a good person. You do good things. You have integrity. You need to stop apologizing because you're not hurting.
Do you think women feel like they have to apologize more than men? Do you feel?
I think a lot of people would tell you that women are more stubborn than men, and that men apologize more. But I think a lot of people would tell you no, men never apologize.
I'm asking that genuinely. I don't know because I'm not a woman. So
I think women are kinder and more polite generally, and are more aware of emotions and feelings if they've offended someone. Any woman I know, if they've offended someone, they're aware of how their actions affect others. Men sometimes are just, we're just trained to get a fucking job done sometimes, and sometimes we might offend somebody and we don't even know it. And
but if you're overthinking of someone's emotions, as if that's...
Think about how draining, Jackie. Think about how draining and how much time you waste thinking about if you've offended or worried or that you've hurt some. Think about how much energy and time you waste and how that energy could be applied to something else. Mm-hmm. I don't waste time thinking. I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
It took me so long to get to be that guy. I always wanted to be that guy that doesn't give a shit about what people think. We all do.
Yeah.
And it took me so long. And now I'm there. And I'm like, I just genuinely. And what got me there is knowing that I'm a good person and knowing a bird person, I don't have to worry about, did I fuck somebody over? Did I hurt somebody's feelings? I go be me. And occasionally I'll do something that will offend somebody or hurt somebody, and they'll tell me. And I'll be like, oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. But I'm very aware of every action I take and how it affects other people.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, this popped in my head. point being made as a comedian, as a woman, like with the whole like Kathy Griffin and Donald Trump thing that just happened, that she did that joke with Donald Trump's severed head and then she apologized for it. Do you think she should have apologized for that? Or
I think no, that all these stars and they get, you know, the rug pulled out from under them with, you know, these big contracts and these deals they have with these channels. I think.
Yeah, CNN dropped her.
I know. And I think on principle, she shouldn't apologize. However, career-wise and for work, she should apologize to keep her job. Now,
I'm torn about it, too. Like, the comedian.
Did they make
like,
her apologize, then fire her? Because that's shitty if they did that.
I don't think they made her apologize. I think, because, you know, when it came out, she first kind of said, hey, this is comedy. This is my expression. But then I think it shocked her that, and I know just from my own Facebook, a lot of like more, because then, you know, I'm pretty liberal as fuck. But I know that a lot of my liberal were just kind of like, Kathy Griffin, we can't believe you did that. And I think that surprised her that a lot of like people that are kind of are on her team.
Yeah, I was like, what? You think people would like, yeah, people are like, stupid.
And so, yeah. And so I think then she apologized. And I appreciated that she apologized because I think a lot of people, if you didn't like, you know, I was kind of torn about it. Like the comic in me is like Joan Rivers wouldn't have fucking like, you know what I mean? Like would not have apologized for that.
That's why we love Joan Rivers. She tell people to fuck off.
Yeah, you know? And so it's like George Carlin would not apologize for that. And so but are we like in a, sorry, I'm going really down a wormhole, everybody. But I'm like, it also, as I'm talking, I'm thinking, are we at that age now just because of social media and the connected that have comics lost the ability to not be in tune with their audience at all?
Yes and no, but we have to fight back. We have to fight back.
So I'm like torn. Like I appreciate why she apologized because honestly, I was more offended that it just wasn't a funny joke to me. It wasn't even that it was about killing Donald Trump or whatever. I was just like, it's not funny.
You have to be able as like, a comedian to do if you aren't pissing somebody off, you're not doing your job.
Yeah, that
because
is true.
What that means is you have to take a stand and a point of view. That's how you build true fans. Mm-hmm. Is we love this person because they take a stand for something mm-hmm. we believe in. If you're not pissing, and that's for me too. I was like, I've never pissed an audience off. And I'm like, I'm not going to consciously go out and do it, mm-hmm. but I'm going to start taking a stand with my material mm-hmm. and taking a stand and a perspective on shit. Mm-hmm. And about a month ago, it was at a gay bar doing a show, and I pissed like five gay guys off and they walked off. So this was a drag convention, and there's a bunch of gay guys in the front row. Mm-hmm. And the audience liked me at first, and then I decided to tell this story about when I was in Amsterdam, I got a hooker. And it turned out to be a transgender hooker. It turned out to be a dude. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, wow. It was like, yep, turned out to be a dude. And I was like, well, I'm halfway through. And this guy goes, that's tasteless, honey. Wrong crowd. Sorry. Got up. This is gross. And walked. We got five guys got up and walked. Mm. And I left that set happier because I'm getting people to think. And that's mm-hmm. your job as a comedian. I'm getting people to think. I don't want to mm-hmm. piss people off. That's not mm-hmm. my job. I don't want to watch people walk away, but I am getting people to think, and that's a good start.
I want to
start.
Know the story now.
Yeah, I got people to think, and the girl who books the show, I don't think she wants to book me anymore after that, and I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck. I would rather go out there and get people to think and have a bad day at work like that. Because I know in the long run, this is going to have people that are like, we go to Griff because he takes a stand on shit. Mm-hmm. He's our mouthpiece for these issues. Because, dude, I'm telling you, you're never going to make it in this business being a play-it-safe guy. Nobody fucking pays to go see someone who plays it safe. Mm-hmm. They can say shit. No, that's why the fuck do you think Trump got in office? Same reason.
Yeah.
He's saying shit that these people don't have the balls to say.
Whereas Hillary tried to appeal to everybody.
Yeah, and
really,
which one worked? Who got into office? You know?
Yeah.
So... that's the thing. Like, Bill
Wait,
Burr,
I'm still caught up on this Amsterdam hooker.
I'm happy to tell the story right now.
Did this really happen?
I'm happy to tell the story.
Oh, totally tell it. I want to know.
I'm in Amsterdam. I'm touring Europe.
Uh-huh.
And this is like my last stop. I'm like, you know what? I'm single. I'm young. When in Rome, let's get a hooker.
Oh, totally. I
go window shopping at night. And my goodness, way better than a kid in a candy store. I mean, these are porn stars. They look like porn stars.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is too good to be true. And it was.
And it was.
Too good to be true. I'm like, they all look like, oh. I shop for 30 minutes, and I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, that's the one. Just, oh, beautiful Brazilian. just everything. Mm-hmm. And there's all these Japanese tourists taking pictures of me going in, and I'm like, fuck you, whatever. So I go in, I hand her a 50 euro. She shakes her head. No talking. 50 euro. I get in there, take my pants off, throw on my helmet, and I start to stroke. And I keep stroking. And I'm going through the five stages of grief. First stage being denial. Second stage being... Second stage being anger. Third stage being like acceptance. I don't know the stages, but I remember when I got to acceptance and I was like, yeah, this is... Because I was like, this vagina. At first, it was like, man, she's pretty dry. And I was like, yeah, she's a hooker and she gets this all the time. But then
I guess it feels differently. See, I wouldn't know.
And then I was like, oh, this is not... I'm like, no, this used to be
a man.
This dude, yeah, because it's very shallow and it doesn't produce any natural lube. So we kept having to get lube every five strokes. And I was like, oh, boy. I was like, you fucked it. And people were like, well, did you finish? I'm like, yeah, I did. Because I don't like to fucking waste money. I don't, if I go to Subway and get a $5 footlong and I'm full after 6 inches, I'm going to finish that sandwich because I don't fucking waste money. So I went in there and did the same thing. So I finished the job. And I got out and I was like, what the fuck just happened? I was like, it was like, Jesus Christ. And I remember thinking, like, and I was telling this story on stage and some Australian guy's like, oh yeah, you fucking idiot. You didn't know about the blue light district? I'm like, what? No, I didn't know about that. What is that? I Googled it. It's a thing. They don't label it so people don't discriminate, which means there are tens of thousands of other men with this dark little secret. And I want to support. I want to start a support group, hang out with a joint and a blanket when they come out. I'm like, listen, you are not alone, buddy. You are not alone, and it's totally okay. And I had so many emotions when I walked out of that room.
I love this story.
And I was like, you know, do I cry or do I mark it off a bucket list? Like, I don't know what to do here. And people are like, how'd you not know? How'd you not know? I'm like, dude.
I wouldn't have known.
Plastic surgery is so good in Brazil. I'm like, how'd you know she was brilliant? Because I heard Portuguese music in the background. I'm like, dude, I just fucked somebody's son. They're looking for their son Paulo down in Rio, and they don't know where he went. He's on posters everywhere, missing. Well, I'm fucked. Some redheaded comedian's fucking your son in Brazil right now, in Amsterdam right now. I was 100% sober, didn't have weed or liquor, so I was like, I just fucked a dude. I just paid to fuck a dude. Let's let that sink in. Wow, I'm sober right now. Woo, sobriety has never been stronger.
Wow.
So, yeah, and the hardest part about accidentally having sex with another man is having to tell your girlfriend. Now, I had told my girlfriend at the time. Now I'm.
Wait, you had a girlfriend?
No. I had to tell my girlfriend after it happened, a year and a half later. And I decided to get her drunk and have this, hey, let's get our skeletons out of our closet convo, which I've told a lot of people are like, dude, no, nobody does that. Couples don't do that. You keep that shit in the past.
Keep the shit
in
the past.
I was like, I know that now. So I got her drunk and she told me her skeletons. And then I was like, so I kind of got a hooker a year and a half ago and it turned out to be a dude. She goes, whoa, you got a hooker? I was like, what? You don't even care it was a dude? She's like, no. She's like, oh, I thought you were such a good guy. You got a hooker. I was like, oh, I was thinking like, fuck you.
Oh, come on. It's in
Amsterdam. Fuck you. It's a hooker. I was like, first off, this isn't a whore on a dumpster. This is a government employee.
It's like a business. Yeah.
This is a government employee. So I'm like, dude, if a girl wants to, I'm like, seriously. Like, if I had a problem with hookers, that's one thing. But if you want to judge me for getting a hooker in Amsterdam, fuck, go fuck off. I don't want to be with that person. So, and I think some girls
would... And you're not.
And some girls would judge. Some girls would judge.
I think a lot of women, though, too, would be...
turned on?
Not turned on, but I think a lot of women, too, because women are just, like you said earlier, it's not only they read more emotions, but I think women I think in a lot of ways they can be conditioned to be, at least in this part of the country, or this part of the world, conditioned to be more open-minded than men. And I don't mean in a closed-minded, but just they kind of think.
Yeah, they are.
Women, you know, they already with their sexuality, it's cooler if they make out with girls. So I think gender for them, they get it more. So like, it's interesting when you tell me that. I think it's a great story, actually. And it's a funny story. And also, I think it's cool that, like, as you were telling the story, I was kind of like, it's funny that, like, when you said, oh, I had sex with a man, I'm, like, proud of myself because I automatically was like, you know, if somebody's transgender, I think of them as a woman. And so it's like, I bet a lot of girlfriends that you talk to probably would have more of a problem with being, they have more problem with the hooker thing because they're like, eh, it's a trans woman, it's a woman, it's a woman.
It's a woman.
It's not like I think you're gay.
No.
And so I think that I love that I love that story.
She didn't care.
Why do people walk out for that? I think it's a – I like that you – what I am liking about you and talking to you, and I think this is why you're pretty good at comedy, is that you definitely – you like – I bet we could go into Disneyland and you would sit and people watch with me because you really like people and like how they work and what – I like that.
I like Disneyland and I have a problem
I like when
that
I go about
there. I always get drunk when I go there.
How do you get drunk at Disneyland?
I bring in a water bottle of white rum, and time I went there for my birthday
with my ex.
That's some
country shit right there.
Yeah, it is.
That's your Oklahoma roots. Right there.
Yeah, it is. So I went there last time on my birthday with my ex, and I got blacked out. I didn't mean to, but I didn't pace myself, and last thing I remember was the haunted house ride, and then I just woke up in my bed in a hotel room. I was like, oh, fuck.
They let you bring in a water bottle? Wow.
Yeah, I was like, oh, fuck, I blacked out at Disneyland, and that's the thing. Girls don't. That's not attractive to
that's
girls.
That's not attractive.
Blacking out at Disneyland is not.
That's not attractive.
That's
to a
so
lot of
unattractive
people.
That a girl will leave you, and that's exactly what happened. But for that, and I'm like, oh damn. So the lesson to be learned: just go with your guy friends to Disneyland if you're going to get drunk. That's the lesson I learned there. No, but Disneyland. I'm telling you, and I know now to pace myself when I go there. I pace myself.
Pace yourself.
Because I'm sitting here, a water bottle doesn't look like that much, and I'm like, just, you know, there's seven shots I just downed in 15 minutes. You don't do that.
You don't do that.
So I will still bring a water bottle and go, but I'm telling you, Disneyland's more fun when you're drunk and get a hotel down there. I'm telling you, the log ride, when you've got a solid buzz going, it is fun. That splash of water feels just that much better. When you go to Indiana Jones, the Pirates of the Caribbean, when you're drinking rum like a drunk pirate, you feel a special connection.
Very meta. I like
it. You feel a special connection to the pirates because you are a pirate in that moment. It's a special thing. I'm
like
telling
that.
You, man, it's fantastic.
Jackie, we went off.
Wow, Jackie, sorry.
Hopefully we answered your question.
Sorry, Jackie. You get the joke? Sorry for all that, Jackie.
Why are we apologizing? We're not supposed to apologize.
Yeah,
that's the whole point. We're not.
Sorry about that, Jackie. You get the joke?
Okay, where are we on time? I'm debating because I don't want to edit. Do I? No, we're going to do this. Okay, second question. You ready?
Yep.
Dear Maddie, so I've been with my girlfriend for over 5 months. We met because we have a mutual friend. He's gay, by the way, and because he's gay, I asked him for help. See, I love my girlfriend. We get along great. We're about to hit the six-month mark, so serious. Here's the deal. She sucks at giving head. Like, seriously, it's frantic. It's like someone is trying to give me head on fast forward. I've been there. I've gently tried to suggest things while she's doing it, and I don't want to seem unappreciative, but she's not getting the hint. So I asked our mutual friend, the gay one, to talk to her about it and give her hints. Well, I asked him to be subtle, but he flat out told her I said something. Now she's pissed at me and saying she can't trust me. She's mortified that I talked to him about it. He and I don't think it's a big deal, but it's been 4 days and she's not answering my texts or calls. Is she overreacting? Do I just swallow my pride? Swallow. Do I just swallow my pride and beg for forgiveness? Thanks, Maddie. This is from Doug, 27.
I've got answers. Do you have answers?
I mean,
I've got a response to that.
Go. You're the guest.
She did overreact. But I can see where she's coming from, so you do need
to get forgiveness.
You need to get forgiveness because you're not doing anything to hurt her. You didn't do something bad. You're literally just trying to help. She didn't like the way you tried to help. So she is overreacting, but you need to see where she's coming from, and you definitely need to be like, listen, babe, I'm sorry that I hurt you, and I didn't mean to. It's a weird thing. The way guys apologize, and any girls listening can relate, the way that we apologize half the time is bullshit because what we say is, I'm sorry that I hurt your feelings. It doesn't count as an apology. That doesn't work. Nope, that does not. It's not an apology to most girls because we're still holding our pride by saying, whoops. No. You need to say, I'm sorry. I screwed up. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings is not accepting that you screwed up. It doesn't work. I learned that way.
You're sensitive.
That's what that is. And we come, what's your deal? No. You need to say, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I hurt you, and I'm sorry. I made a mistake. And I did it out of the good of my heart, and I just was just trying to help. I was trying to give you hints, and it wasn't working, so I just tried to do it that way. And I hurt you, and I made a mistake. That's how you should handle that.
Well, I
because
think,
you're going to be yeah. getting no blowjobs no if you blow don't jobs. Apologize.
I think, Doug, I think your intention, and maybe say this to your girlfriend, your intention was, I'm reading into this, but you tell me if I'm wrong. Your intention was you didn't want to make your girlfriend feel awkward. You didn't want to make her feel weird. So your intention was, hey, I'll talk to our friend, because I imagine you're thinking, oh, a gay guy and a girl probably talk about that kind of stuff more than like she does with a straight. So your intention was for him to like subtly help her so that way she doesn't feel inadequate or awkward or she's in her head when she's giving a blowjob. So I think your intention there was to support her.
Yeah.
It just backfired on you. So maybe if you explain it like that, and then if she still doesn't get it, then she's way overreacting and you probably want to move on.
Yeah, because she's a crazy bitch.
It's not going to go well for others.
Yeah,
it's not going to go well for others.
Yeah, no, you don't want to deal with that.
No, yeah, because I get it. Yeah, I mean, it's like, have you ever told a woman, like, given woman advice for, like, a blowjob? Have you had that, like, experience or, like,
I've been with a girl
stuff?
And like, been like, find hey, it better hey to... oh, easy on the teeth. And you've probably been there, too.
Yep, I've been there.
Easy on the teeth. And they're like, no, just grab the head like that. Yeah, just like that. And in the moment, I'll guide.
I think is good in the moment, because then it's not like... If you can do in the moment, then it's not like 2 hours later you're sitting down and saying, hey, can we have a conversation about your blowjobs? Because then it can make it a bigger deal than it is if you're just in the moment being like, oh, hey, that hurts. Oh, hey, slow down. Like, this is what – same things with sex. If you can talk about it – this is from a personal and from a therapist perspective. If you can bring it up in the moment, I feel like it goes way better than if you have to have a conversation
with
later.
Blowjobs. Now, with her – I'm not trying to toot my horn, but I'm really good at going down on girls. Not trying to, and I know.
Can't do it.
I know. I can imagine. Woo. Yeah. So
no,
if there was anything she wanted me to do more of, we wouldn't do it in the moment with her. We would talk about it later. Oh, she's like, hey, I like the way you do all the kissing before.
Mm-hmm.
We would talk about it outside. So I guess with a girl, it was the other way around. But with me, in the moment, I'd be like, yeah. I'd coach in the moment. I'd be like, yeah, just like that.
But you don't want to be coached when you're doing that. Like when you're going down on a girl, you'd rather just tell her
afterwards?
Yeah,
it kind of would kill it for me. But with the blowjob, it seemed to work out and be fine. But with the going down on the girl, going down with a girl is more sensual. It really is. It's more... kind of a romantic thing. Blowjob's just like shoving a cock in someone's...
Oh, Chris Pippin, you're a lover.
I am. Blowjob's like shoving your cock in someone's mouth and trying to get off. That's all it is. It's very primal. But going down on a girl is much more sexual and sensual. And the girl's body is more sensual, and it takes more to get a girl off. And there's more emotion involved. For us, it's just that we're apes. We just want to get our nut. Girls, there's emotion connected. That's why a girl, it's harder for her to sleep with a guy she just met because she has to like and feel comfortable. We'll fuck. And
for a lot of women. I've known a couple of girls that are just like.
Not all women. I know. But guys, we'll fuck you. And especially gay guys will just like get on Grindr and be like, hey, you want to meet behind that abandoned McDonald's and just blow each other? And I know that sounds like, hey, that's offensive towards gay people. I'm like, no, because that fucking happens all the time.
I mean,
not all gay guys. But, dude, I was in Dallas.
It wasn't McDonald's for me. Just call it Carl's Jr. But same thing.
I was in Dallas at a friend's wedding. One of the groomsmen with me was gay. And he was like, dude, you know what? We were just talking about dating apps. He's like, oh, yeah, he's on Grindr. I was like, what's that? He's like, here, give me your phone. Downloads it. Fun. Puts my face on there. And starts messaging dudes. I mean, within minutes, dudes are ready to meet in parking lots to fuck in a car. And I'm like, yeah. But I'm like, I get it, because guys want to fuck everything all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're gay, I'm like, damn, I wish I were gay. Because it's like, dude, you just meet up. And it's like, because you have this mutual understanding of just getting each other off. With girls, it's, you know.
It's much more of a dance.
It's a dance. You can't just expect. Some girls just will just give it up when you're dating them whenever and be fine with sex whenever. But some girls, like, they've got to be in the right emotional state of mind. For us. Mm-hmm. There's never, like, if we're stressed out, we want to fuck. It helps. If you're having a long day at work, we'll fuck your way through it. Girls, a lot of times, if they're stressed out, that's the last thing in their mind. So it's tougher. I mean, you know, but also, if you're gay, it's a lot harder to get a guy to be loyal.
There is a lot of that, yeah. There is a lot. I wish that wasn't a true stereotype.
Because I'm a dude. I get it. I'm not attracted to guys, but I totally get, like, we want to bang everything. Mm-hmm. We do. We can't help it. And maybe mm-hmm. you can relate to us, but redheads are supposed to be known. There's not a lot of science backing it, but I think it's true. From the girls I've dated and all the people I know, I think redheads are hornier. Historically, we're supposed to be known that way, and there's
he'll kill me if I say this, but my boyfriend all the time is like, chill out. I'm always like saying something, trying to touch him.
We're
always
hornier. We are more sexual and hornier. So, I really think that's
But I don't know. Oh, wow. I have to like.
I think it's a redhead thing. It really is. All the redheads I've dated and I know and my friends that are redheads, every single one of them has a high libido. And you Google it and it says myths about redheads, short tempers, this and that. There are things that are true. We need more anesthesia. Our bones are stronger. Our hair doesn't go gray. It goes white. There's a lot of things that are true about redheads. I think we have higher sex drive. And that's also linked to a shorter temper, too, because higher testosterone. Do you have a shorter temper?
No. Well, no.
Okay. Well,
Do you get hot-tempered?
Yeah, I do. And it's mainly because I'm in the car so much, mm-hmm. dealing with idiots on the road. And that's no excuse, but I need to learn how to control it.
It's an impulse, but I made a decision, like, when I moved out here. I think I've done a lot of, like, work on myself, so I don't get hot-tempered because I have a lot of coping tools.
That's good. Well, I need to. Sometimes I have.
But I use shit like that all the time.
I have eucalyptus oil in my car, and if like someone is trying to take a left turn when it's no left turn 4 to 7 and it's 4:30, I pull out the eucalyptus.
Although I say that, you know, my boyfriend just said to me the other day, he was like, "Calm down." So maybe I am a jackass on the road, and I just don't know it. All right, we're doing good here. I'm Griff Pippin. I really enjoy you. Okay, so we're at the last part of the show, Chatty Matty questions. Same 5 questions, every guest, all right? So, Chatty Matty number 1, what's your most memorable childhood smell?
It's actually a pretty deep question. Cut grass, fresh cut grass in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And it's still so nostalgic.
You picture in your head right now, like,
yeah, because I always had to mow the lawn as a kid, and it's just something about it, like getting a job done and you know, feeling accomplished and the smell of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Probably that.
Do your parents still live in Oklahoma? Are they together?
Yeah, they're not together, but yeah, they still live in Oklahoma.
Do you have siblings?
One sister.
Okay, she's there too?
Yeah,
they're all there. I like it. I wish people could see your face because I just. Totally, we were talking about being hot-tempered and stuff and, like, sex, and you were kind of like, bam, bam, bam. And as soon as I asked this question, your whole body just relaxed. Like, you saw the image. It was cool. All right, Chatty Matty number 2. What would be the name of your memoir?
Multiple Character Disorder.
Oh, yeah?
If you've seen my act.
Okay. Chatty Matty number 3. Best piece of advice you wished you had taken earlier in life?
Don't be scared. Don't be scared. What a fucking Argentinian. Don't be scared. Where? I've lived in the city too long. Don't be scared of failure. There's no such thing. Because
just go out there and do shit.
Go out there and do shit, man. And don't be like, I don't want to do it because I don't want to fail. Just go out there and do it and fail.
That's the beauty of stand-up comedy is that like you're going to fail and you're going to fail very quickly. Yeah, I mean, and then you're going to learn from it. Because I remember, too, like, when I first did, like, this stand-up, I had, like, my little set that I'd done. And, like, I'd done, like, 3 or 4 shows. And every time it just was, like, bam, bam, bam. And it was funny. And then, like, I did a show and it was a different type of audience. And it freaked me out. Because I did the same set and nobody fucking laughed at anything. Except for the one thing that I didn't think was funny, people thought was hilarious. And so it was definitely a learning moment in that. Failure is not a bad thing. It's just, it's so subjective.
It's a good thing. Yeah. Failure is the most beautiful thing in the world.
Yeah.
Granted,
you learn from it. Yeah.
There's too many fucking morons in this town and this world that don't learn.
Oh, he's getting hot for today. Think about cut grass. Don't get hot today. Okay. Chatty Matty number 4. What day would be your Groundhog Day?
I am going to say I'm guilty to anyone listening. I don't even know what that concept is. When people
no,
say
that's
Groundhog
okay.
Day.
So, like, what day was so great, you're like, I could do that fucking day over and over? Let me guess. It was in Amsterdam. You just...
Okay. I can tell you I haven't had my true Groundhog Day yet.
There's nothing wrong with that then. Then maybe, like, you're searching for that. Or what, if you haven't had it yet, what would it be?
It has to be a day that I got laid. It's got to be in there. Sex has to be in there.
What else would have to be in there?
What, is this a specific day that actually happened, or can
Well, if you don't have a day.
I can't think of a day. So here's what it would look like.
Yo, I like this. I've never done this with somebody.
Here's what it looks like.
So there'd be some sex.
Here's what it would look like. A girl I've been close friends with for a long time, but started to kind of get a crush on. We have, like, earth-rattling sex because there's a special connection, because that foundation of friendship was there, and we've broken that barrier. That would be in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, endorphins rushing. I would play this new Zelda game. I would start playing it.
Oh, I got to set mine up.
Yeah. So I'd start Breath of the Wild that same day. I would get a phone call that I got on some kind of TV show so I'd get some kind of television credit.
Mm-hmm.
And this television show is going to pay me enough to where I can quit my day jobs. That's my Groundhog Day.
That's a good Groundhog Day. I hope that day for you.
I that's not realistic that could keep happening and over.
No,
and over,
I like it.
But that doesn't really count.
You might. I got to set up this Nintendo. My brother bought it for me. I got to do it. I just have been busy. So, chatty matter number five. When are you most inspired?
When I see a rebel challenging the status quo and succeeding.
Mm.
So when I see someone say, to be good, to stand out at anything, you have to go against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
To be someone who's a pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
And to see someone say, no, I'm not okay with this. This is bullshit. And to stand their ground against adversity and to win.
Mm.
That inspires me.
Mm.
And that's really through seeing that enough has become who I am. Mm. I am not afraid to fail. I'm not afraid to offend people. Like, my material and my comedy and my persona and my mantra in life is just like, live by who you know. Just once again, not sorry, you know. This is who I am. This is what the world's gonna get, and it's not like, hey, this who I am. Fucking deal with it. That's a different kind of. Mm-hmm. No, like I'm excited to offend people. I'm excited to fail. I'm excited because that means I'm being unique.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see this rebel,
and you're on the edge of something instead of just being safe in the middle.
I don't want to be safe anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to be comfortable. Comfort is the worst place you can be in life. Going through pain and tough times is what causes you to grow. You don't grow as a person by being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
No one great ever lived a comfortable life. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't come out to be famous or rich. I don't care. That'd be nice. I'd like that. But I want to die knowing I was 100% me. I gave everything I could. And I want people to say that Griff Pippen guy, we haven't seen anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And in this town, if you can genuinely say, nobody's doing what I'm doing, I don't give a shit if I'm on TV. I don't give a shit if I have the credibility of all my peers. If I can genuinely say I'm doing something nobody's done and nobody's doing and be unique, and I'm unique because I'm true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That is really what I want to be. And when I see people doing that, that inspires me.
Mm. I like that. That was a good answer. Griff Pippen, we got deep. Now, so tell everybody, we talked about this before the show, and I forgot. Tell everybody where they can find you. You host your own podcast. I didn't know that you had your own podcast. So tell everybody where they can find all things you.
A podcast. You can find me at Griff Pippen on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You might type
and that's Griff, just so you know, Griff, and then Pippen as a musical show, Pippin.
So I have a podcast, Surely You're Joking, right?
It's called Surely You're Joking.
Surely You're Joking. Solid podcast. Now, a buddy of mine who's a PhD in nuclear physics at Caltech, who's also a comedian, I was like, why don't we do a science comedy podcast? And so we went forward and decided to start a podcast. And with our co-host Jimmy O Yang, who is on the show Silicon Valley, is the character Jin Yang. And unfortunately, one of our co-hosts, Matthew Broussard, moved on to New York to greener pastures. But it's a science comedy podcast.
I'm excited to listen to
it's
the show.
It's a science comedy podcast. I will say this. There are funnier podcasts, and there are more science-oriented podcasts. However, I will say you will learn and you will laugh at the same time.
I love that. I love that.
You will learn. And Kevin and our guests are high-level
like, I listen
scientists.
To Stuff You Should Know. I love that podcast.
Right. And this is going to be a funny version of that.
Yeah.
And basically, you're going to learn some stuff, but I make sure that I'm the comedy relief. It's when it gets too serious into quantum mechanics and black holes, I'm like, okay. Black dicks. Yep. I have to slide in a dick joke.
Yeah.
Because it's getting too deep here, guys.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So, worth the late. Yeah. We had guests like Bill Nye, Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian. We had, we have NASA engineers on, the guys who landed the Mars rover, the guys who just discovered those new planets. So,
oh my God, I would love, I watch The Cosmos and it makes me cry. That's the kind of shit that makes me cry.
We're trying to get Neil
Not
deGrasse.
Selfish choice.
We're trying to get him on there. We got a hold of his agent and they basically told us, fuck off. But we're not giving up.
You're not going to give it up.
We're not going to give up at all.
Because you're a rebel. You're a rebel with cause.
Yep.
You are.
I love
that.
That's the name of my memoir.
Yeah, Griff Pippin. Thank you for doing this show. Thanks for,
thanks for having me.
You didn't even know who I was. You're like, sure, I'll come over. Sure, it worked out well. So, everybody, so follow Griff at, I'll have it on there, but all his social media at Griff Pippin. And Surely You're Joking, the podcast.
Surely You're Joking.
Surely You're Fucking Joking, everybody. As for the rest of you, thank you so much for listening. You know I appreciate it. I'll talk to you in the little after show, but do something kind for someone next, and we'll see you next week. Thank you again, Griff.
Yeah.
Bye. Sugars, we did it again. We are leaving that 100th show behind and continuing on. So I'm excited again with Podcast Movement. I met a lot of cool people, a lot of interesting people. So I'm excited to have a lot of different people on the show. So I think it's going to create just a cool variety of guests, Sugars. Cannot wait. What else is going on? Jake and I just wrapped up TBT Time, a boy band review. We actually recorded ourselves witnessing the when they picked the five members of the boy band. So if you like watching two gay men in their late third 20s queen out like 13-year-old girls, that's definitely a video you want to see, or you can actually hear it too at the podcast. And so we're gearing up for Riverdale. That's coming back in the fall, in October. And also, I've heard that Finding Prince Charming is coming back, but we just don't know when. So it should be coming back because we need a show we can kind of, dig into a little bit, Sugars, and shade a little bit. I mean, it is TBT time after all. Other than that, things are going great here. I'm worried because it's supposed to be really hot in Los Angeles this week. And y'all know how I feel about the heat and no air conditioning. I guess I'll get through it. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Griff. Such a sweet guy. Be sure to follow him if you're in the Los Angeles area. He's doing stand-up all the freaking time. So go see him. And be sure to leave a review of the show on Apple Podcasts or Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts. Actually, start and leave a review. That helps us. And Sugars, I love you. See you next week.